Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Today we're in-depth on parent shaming. And you know what I'm talking about. When that child in Cincinnati slipped through a barrier into the gorilla cage at the zoo, people eviscerated that mother on Facebook. Now, few even knew the specific details of how the boy had gotten into the cage, but the racial insults and the violence-tinged threats were so intense that the police had to get involved. That might be the extreme, but parent blaming takes a lot of different forms. The self-righteous tisking over the way someone's kid behaves, I'm guilty of this, the smugness about what your family does and another family doesn't. Today, a discussion about where parent shaming comes from and the social implications of it, and I think your experience is really essential to the conversation. Have you been on the receiving end of parent shaming, whether it's online or in person? How'd you handle it? Or have you been part of the social media or in-person parent shamers? Did the self-righteousness feel pretty good? Do you see parent shaming as kind of necessary? So I want you to think about that, whether you've been on the receiving end of this or you've been a part of this, whether it's online or in person. Why is it that this kind of self-righteous shaming feels pretty good? What do you think the social implications of it? Is there a necessity for it in some ways? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Steph Curtis moderating the discussion at nprnews.org/live. And I'm on Twitter and seeing what some of you are tweeting right now. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Our guest this hour, Dr. Shefali Sabari, is a clinical psychologist and author of The Awakened Family. And she's with us today from New York. And Shefali, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Lenore Skenazy is with us. She's author of the book and blog Free Range Kids. And she's also with us from New York. And Lenore, welcome to you. It's good to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks. It's a New York-centric show.
I guess it is, except for me and all
of
our callers. Lenore, I want to understand more about the psychology. Well, actually, maybe I better put this to Shefali, since I want to talk about the psychology of parent shaming. Shefali, why does it feel good? I mean, why do people join in with this sense that if I don't have my say on this, you know, the world goes to hell in a handbasket, that kind of thing? What propels this?
Oh, my God. It's the most primitive, and I hate to say it, normal human tendency to create a sense of superiority within the self, which means that we put other people down. So here it is, indicative of a deep longing within all of us to feel good about ourselves. So it comes from this good place, but then quickly becomes toxic, because in order to feel good about oneself, one should really just feel an inner deep sense of worth. But unfortunately, because we're lacking that, we can only feel good about ourselves when we prey on the well-being of others. So when a situation like this one at the zoo arises, which is kind of cherry-picked for this sort of blaming and shaming, because now finally there's another parent out there who's actually done something in my eyes that is more clueless, more egregious than me. So let me jump on that wagon and allay and assuage all my incompetencies by projecting my insecurities onto this parent. And for once, I can claim to be better than, so I'm going to go for it. It just comes really from a deep longing to be seen as good, to know that we're competent and worthy, but then because it's a deep longing that never gets checked or healed, it becomes toxic and it's rampant and it's a sickness of our society which needs to be checked.
Wow, that is an excellent explanation. It answers a lot of my questions. Lenore, I was thinking as I heard Shefali describe that it's not all that different from the kind of celebrity shaming, right? There's nothing we like more than to build some celebrity up and then pull them down with all the idiotic things they do and the terrible way they look when they were caught going to the coffee shop and that kind of
cellulite on, yeah. Cellulite on a Kardashian.
Right.
I mean, also, nuclear war breaks out. But first, cellulite.
Exactly. Yeah,
so what the doctor is talking about is completely right. There's even a term for it now. She says toxic. It's toxic sentimentality. It's like, I care so much about this child, about this child's welfare, or sometimes the gorilla, that I am performing this in front of you by jumping on a bandwagon. But what's interesting about this shaming is that it's not just celebrities and it's not just politicians anymore. Now it is parents. So
right.
I think that's what is new, is that two things have made it extremely possible for us to throw a Facebook post up about some woman let her child wait in the car for 3 minutes. Or the one I have on my blog today is that parents came to a buffet, a Chinese buffet in Sandusky, Ohio, and put their baby in his little baby carrier at the booth and then went to get their food. And the guy at the next table took out a video, you know, took out his camera and started videotaping them. And it got 4 million views. They let
Are
they abandon
kidding?
Their child.
Are you kidding?
No,
oh,
I'm not
my
kidding.
Gosh.
No.
4 million views.
Yeah. 4 million views. And one of a man who videotaped a child waiting in the car for 3 minutes while the mom went into the gas station.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
2.5 million views. So there's two things going on. One is we have cell phones.
Right.
Cell phones make it so easy. It's like we're all the paparazzi looking for bad moms. It's basically moms usually rather than dads. And the second thing that's going on is that there's this crazy new idea that anytime a child does not have their parents' eyes directly upon them, even if they're at the gas station paying for the gas, even if they're getting, the spare ribs at the Chinese buffet, somehow the child is not only in danger, but abandoned, you know, going to be killed. And only thanks to the vigilantism of the guy with the video camera has somebody cared. And often what
the absurdity as you describe this is just unreal. Real.
I know. That's what's so interesting to me, because it is so absurd, and yet it is unreal, and people take it as real. People believe that in the 3 minutes a child is waiting in the car, something terrible could happen, which is true. But ironically, the thing that the mother did that was more dangerous that day was driving her child anywhere.
Exactly.
Anytime a kid is in a car, that's not that they're likely to die, but that is the number one way kids die, is in car accidents. And so what they're really saying is it's when the mother is in the car with the kid, no problem. We're not going to judge. But the second the mother leaves the child anytime, anywhere, for whatever amount of time, even to get the spare ribs, the child is in terrible danger. That's new.
Veronica on Twitter says, I'm debating right now if I should speak up in a mom thread where a mom asked to have another mom's expired car seat. Shefali, I don't want to miss what Lenore said there when she said it's usually moms and not dads. Well, why is that?
Oh, well,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. Shefali, I thought
Shefali,
maybe you'd
on,
want
yeah.
to, yeah.
Well, you know, I think it's because as moms, our identity is so caught up, I think more because of what culture has placed on us as mothers, mm-hmm. our biological role. And also, for the most part, we're the ones who give up our career and kind of do the tending and caring for the early years. Our identity gets so wrapped up in the good mother identity, and we forget who we are really outside of that identity. So now, how I perform as a mother really becomes my identity as a human being. This mm-hmm. is now my entire persona. I don't have anything else
wow.
except how my child fares. But let's take shaming off what we do to the other to even something more profound, which is what we do to our children. You know, ultimately, this inner critic that we now place on other people, you know, the critic that gets unleashed on every single mother out in the park who does things differently than us.
Right.
That critic also lives within ourselves. And that critic also comes out on our children. You see this unleashed exhibitionism of shaming, not only on other mothers, but also on our children, on the media. You've seen children being videotaped, getting their hair shaved because they talked to a boy or sent a picture that was inappropriate. Now parents are taking shaming as a glorified version of their worth in all ways, right? I'm a good parent. I'm going to shame my kid publicly on Facebook. I'm a good parent. I'm going to shame another parent who does things differently. This is all about our own inner shame. And if we don't talk about that, then the real issue doesn't get addressed. You know, how we project this inner shame on the others around us.
Okay, we have a lot of people that want to get in on this via Twitter and by phone. Let me go to the phones here first. To Jenny in St. Louis Park. Hi, Jenny. What's your experience with this?
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My experience has been, I have a 6-year-old son and an 8-year-old daughter. And my 6-year-old was diagnosed with ADHD at age 4. And our experience has been pretty positive in the school system, but we have definitely experienced shaming, especially the weekends, because he takes medication during the week that allows him to function and transition during the school day so he can, you know, excel and perform. But it is hard, and I have to take a deep breath and explain to people that I don't know that some of his behavior is really not in his control. And if we don't take him off his meds on the weekend, he actually loses weight because his medication is an appetite suppressant. So we really need him to eat on the weekend.
Jenny, does this mean that then when you take your son out in public, he's a little harder for you to manage and you see the reaction of the people with whom you're, you know, interacting, right?
He's actually really good at like going to stores and shopping. It's more in the like playground setting. He has a lot of energy, and he sometimes doesn't pay attention to social clues from other kids around him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, fortunately, he gets special ed services through the school, so they work with him a lot, and he's definitely matured and developed. But it's still, you know, just kind of back there that he's not always aware because he's so hyper and distracted. And so, you know, usually I've once just having the discussion with other parents, they tend to say, oh, OK, I understand. But it's definitely kind of like the side eye or the eye rolling. And I just try to be patient and educate them. So.
Yeah, I'm really glad for your call, Jenny. Lenore, I have to totally confess to this, that I'm one of those adults that if parents don't manage their kids like in a store or in a restaurant, I'm the eye roller. I'm like, what is the deal with these parents? But, you know, and
well,
I do that.
Can I please address that for a second? First of all, you know, of course, if you're trying to have this quiet meal and there's a kid throwing peas from the next table at the restaurant, you're going to be frustrated. One of the reasons the kid is at the table at the restaurant is because we're never allowed to not have our children with us. If the assumption is that anytime a child is unsupervised, they're in danger, and I'm worried that the police are going to come and arrest me, or somebody's going to videotape my kid playing at the park without me, then they're with us all the time. And sometimes they're in places that used to be more adult dominated. And so if we let kids play in the park at age 6 with their other friends, and we went off to a restaurant for an hour without that being considered, you know, a felony, then the kid would get their yayas out and we would have a quiet dinner. But almost that's become impossible in this era of people thinking that anytime a child is unsupervised, they're in danger. And I just wanted to address that for a second, because most of us grew up, and I'm guessing you grew up this way, Carrie, like walking to school and playing
by
outside.
Myself.
And playing with your friends after school.
Right.
And if you were outside any time after 1963, it was less safe than now. We're back to the crime rate of 1963. And so it's not crazy to let kids play outside at the park, walk to school, go to a friend's house, knock on the door, and come home, you know, for dinner. But when society has deemed it crazy, just because of this excessive fear that we have, then you can't let your kids have any independence, and then you are with them at the restaurant and trying to keep them calm in what is really a more adult atmosphere.
This is a conversation, if you've tuned in, about parent shaming. It's a conversation we've been wanting to have ever since that over-the-top hyperbolic reaction happened when the woman's child slipped through the barrier at the Cincinnati Zoo. Mm-hmm. Not a good situation, but the reaction, oh my gosh, Facebook blew up and the poor mother got threats and, you know, there's a lot of shaming around what happened to the gorilla. We're talking overall this morning as you listen in about parent shaming, where it comes from, why it feels good, why that kind of self-righteousness is destructive. in a lot of ways. And it doesn't only happen online, happens in person. If you've been the target of some of this, I'd love to hear what your experience is like. And maybe you had a conversation with some of those shamers. If you've been part of the shaming mob and you know who you are, maybe you're taking a minute right now to think about why that is, why you kind of joined in the shaming. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. On Twitter, Steph, listen to this. Somebody who tweets a sanctimony tweets says, why not the dad? This is what I call the sexism of low expectations. I take two kids to the grocery store and people will praise me. No one praises my wife for taking two kids to the grocery store, but it is no more work. Maureen in Minneapolis says, I left my son a locked car, had to use the ATM. By the time I came out, there was someone saying they were going to call the cops. Steph, off the page.
Becky says, I've been the target of parent shaming. A few years ago, a photo of me with my then 2-year-old twin boys showed up on the website Fail Blog. It was a photo of my husband took of us in the Atlanta airport. My boys had those backpack harnesses with the little kid leash on them. Boys thought it would be hilarious if one of them lay down and one of them ran around me in circles. The judgmental comments from that photo were very hurtful. I'm sorry, Becky. That sounds
the boys,
terrible.
I love
Becky needs a reality show. That sounds fantastic.
To the phones here to Bree in Lewiston. Hey, Bree, which side of this have you been on, or what is your thought about this?
Oh, good morning. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I actually just have more of a comment. Is one thing as a parent that I've tried to embrace, and I have a 20-year-old and a 15-year-old, is that every child is different, and there is no universal manual on how to raise children. And I think just knowing that each individual child has different needs and behaviors and desires, and adjusting those to parenting is the best way, at least that I've come to parent. And so I just tried to take that with other people as well, that there's no manual. And actually, my daughter now uses that when she has tough decisions, going, I just wish I had a manual.
Shivali, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I love that you said that, because even to the earlier woman's comment when, her kid was photographed in the restaurant, all these parents are longing for, we're all in this boat together. This is not an easy job. It is a challenging job. And, we're figuring it out. Our children are different than us. Some of them have problems or challenges that we've never encountered before. So getting the judgment from other parents when we know that even they don't really know what they're doing is just a toxic epidemic that needs to be, we need to raise our arms together, join together and say no more. But we have to stop this ourselves, right? We have to stop this tendency ourselves of judging other parents when they are trying to manage their kid who may be having a temper tantrum and that parent really doesn't know how to handle it. I'm a therapist. I'm an author of conscious parenting because I teach parents how to help their kid through a tantrum, but it's hard. It's hard because it raises their own childhood into question, right? How they were parented
exactly.
when they were children. They may not have been soothed. They may not have been taught emotional regulation. So now they're with a kid who is unregulated and they don't know how to handle it. So we as adults now need to lay off that judgment and pressure and really have compassion towards each other so that we can support each other in constructive ways. What good does this shaming do except create greater anxiety in the parent, greater toxicity in our culture, and greater than shaming and pressure on the child? Because we're all trying to pretend we know how to raise children, and we really don't. It is a journey that we're all endeavoring to the best level of consciousness that we were raised with.
Yeah, this is really important. Lenora, I don't want to skip over this because I was wondering how much of this is about anxiety about, are you parenting better or worse than the way you were parented in some different circumstances, right? In a different landscape
different circumstances
than you were parented.
First of all, the other thing is I don't think that we can't, I'm still probably judging sometimes in my brain. I'm just not videotaping anybody.
Yeah.
I'm not putting their picture on Facebook. But you know, we all have anxiety. That's not new. What I'd like to see is what the doctor is talking about, which is just basically giving people the benefit of the doubt. You know, if I pass by a car and there's a kid waiting there and they're, you know, they're reading something or they're watching an iPad and it's in front of the drugstore or in front of the Starbucks, I'm going to, you know, assume that the parent loves that child more than I do. And they have thought that this is a, you know, this makes sense for them rather than dragging their kid in. Or if a kid is walking outside and I think, oh, my God, my child didn't walk around, you know, outside at that age, I'm going to, you know, check, are you okay, kid? But I'm not going to assume that there's negligence involved, and I'm not going to assume that I have, you know, stumbled upon the instance of the world's worst parenting, and I can't wait to see the child taken away from and put into foster care.
Man.
I'm going to be the community that we all want to see. It's like, if I think the kid is in danger, I'll wait at the car for a few minutes and make sure that the parent is coming back. But I know that pretty soon we have to go on a break, but I do want to talk about the guy who mentioned the sexism of low expectations.
Sure.
Why is it usually moms?
Yeah, go ahead.
Not dads who get shamed. Well, there was just a fascinating study done at the University of California, Irvine, where the researchers gave five different sets of people the same exact scenario, but different circumstances. The scenario was a child is in the car for 30 minutes, you know, with the windows down. And the first group heard that the child was there for 30 minutes because the mom was just dropping a book off at the book drop but got hit by a car and was unconscious for 30 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
And the second group heard that the kid was in the car because the mom had to do a little bit of work.
So this
third
is just group, an experiment, just,
it's an
just
experiment.
To be clear.
This
okay.
is not a real situation. This
uh-huh.
is just seeing people's reactions to the child. You know, what would how endangered did they think this child was
Got
waiting
it.
For 30 minutes in the car? So first one, mom is, you know, blameless. She meant to get right back in the car, but she got hit by a truck or whatever. Second time, she's doing some work. Third, she's doing some relaxing. Fourth, she's doing some volunteering. And fifth, she's going to meet her illicit lover. She's having a love affair with somebody who isn't the husband.
Yeah.
And they asked people to gauge 1 to 10 how endangered was the child. Now, remember, the circumstances for the kid are exactly the same.
Right.
The kid is alone for 30 minutes without the mom there. And what they found was that when the mom accidentally left the child there, did not make a conscious decision that the kid was going to be fine, they thought that the kid was safer. They graded it like at a 6 of danger as opposed to an 8 or 9 of danger when she was going off to meet the lover. And so what that
wow.
No, isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, because it showed that while we think we're making a rational risk analysis, okay, 30 minutes, the child is alone, we're not. We're actually judging the mom. And then they explained that this is a feedback loop because we think only a terrible mom would deliberately leave her child. And once you think that this, you're talking about a terrible mom, especially a terrible mom who goes and has an affair, then you start thinking that the danger is higher. And once you think the mother has left the child in danger, then you think that the mom is worse, and then you think the danger is worse. So it's this spiral that we don't recognize happening where we start out by judging the mom, and then we overjudge the danger to the child. And then
exactly.
If we have time, I'll tell you what happened when they did the same experiment, but they said that they used a man as an example, a dad
yes.
instead of a mom.
Tell me what happened.
They thought that, well, for a mom, the least danger was when she was unconscious, and then it was notched up when she was going to work. They thought the child was in more danger. But for the dad, the danger level was assumed to be the same when he wasn't when he was knocked unconscious and when he went to work. And so to me, that says that already when a mom has brazenly chosen to go to work instead of staying every second with her precious progeny, we are already judging her harshly. How dare she take her eyes off her child just to go to work?
Shefali, by the way, when Lenore used the phrase foster care, the first thing I thought of, there's all kinds of kids in circumstances mm-hmm. we would not wish them to be in, right? In
Absolutely.
Maybe some homes in the foster care system that aren't great. Maybe they're hungry. Maybe they're growing up in a violent neighborhood. Where's all the concern and the shaming or the judgment and interest around that?
Right, but even if you did have judgment around that, it's useless energy being wasted because there's no constructive action being taken. And constructive action can only be taken when there's a genuine interest in bettering the situation and
That's
not simply
so true.
Being a bystanding commentator just to make yourself mm-hmm. feel good. So it's all superficial, symptoms of a society that's just invested in one-upping the other and, you know, exhibiting their superiority. And this is sad, really. And like I started out saying, it's tragic,
it's a sad normalcy that we have now all participated in thanks to social media, and we all need to check ourselves. Either we, you know, I always tell people, either you contribute towards constructive action or stay out of the commentating, because just simply being a, you know, commentator through your intellect is just, you know, doing what? Doing nothing to it. Either go and spend your hour on your lunch break going and helping someone in need and bettering the situation, or contributing at least to constructive thought and action and compassionate change, or stay out of the game, because you're just adding to the fact that this is something we can commentate on and then leave the game. You know, no. If you're so interested, do something about it, or
here's something that you can do. You see the kid in the car, you're worried, oh my God, what if the parent has forgotten this child, or what if somebody is going to come get the child? Well, you stand there, and rather than videotaping, make sure that, that the parent is coming back.
Right.
Exactly. Instead of getting the police officers there to now scare the child, wait and see what the situation calls for. But then who has the time for that, right? Let's just relieve ourselves of the burden of constructive action, and let's just dump it on someone else and make ourselves feel like we did something good. This is something deeper about how we've become passive and exhibitionist at the same time, and people are applauding us for it on Facebook, you know, or on social media, you know, any kind of social outlet that we've now chosen, and no one gets called for it because there's this anonymity. And our children really ultimately, as Lenore knows very well, suffer for this.
Right.
It's the children who suffer for this.
Rebecca in Maple Grove says, before she had kids, she was self-righteous and judgmental of people's parenting skills. Now she has kids. She's found herself eating crow.
Yes.
It's so much harder than it looks. And step off the page.
Jerome says, as a single father, I've received unwarranted criticism and advice about how I discipline or reward my daughter. It has only happened inside stores or the checkout aisles, since I avoid putting personal or family pictures and info online. But too often people seem to think they have the right to tell me how I should parent without knowledge of what issues my daughter may or may not have.
Lou on Twitter, great conversation. I can't bear to look at Facebook comments for any news story concerning parents for this reason. If you've just tuned in, discussion this morning about parent shaming, why we do it, what the effect of it is. Yeah, this has really been enlightening for me. Dr. Shefali Sabari with us. She's a clinical psychologist and the author of The Awakened Family, and Lenore Skenazy with us. She's the author of the book and the blog, Free Range Kids. Have you been the target of it? Have you joined in on it? What are you hearing that's changing your mind about this? Maybe making you think twice about it, from our guests. 800-242-2828. 651-227-6000. If you get a busy signal, call us back. Lots of people getting in. You can always join in on the discussion at nprnews.org/live and on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. I'd like to hear about incidences where you were the target, or this discussion has made you think twice about something that you posted in the last month or so on Facebook or on Twitter about the behavior of another parent or their kids. Are you thinking twice about that? Love to hear about that. Phil Picardi now with the latest news. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Carrie. Presidential candidate Donald Trump is rolling out proposals to make child care more affordable. At a speech in a Philadelphia suburb today, Trump will call for guaranteeing new mothers 6 weeks of paid maternity leave. He will also lay out plans to create new dependent care savings accounts that would allow families to set aside money to look after their children or elderly parents. Al-Qaeda's Syrian affiliate is criticizing the U.S.-Russia ceasefire deal, saying its aim is to defeat Islamic Jihad and weaken insurgents in Syria. The group that was formerly known as the Nusra Front is praising other insurgent factions in Syria that have criticized the deal for excluding the Al-Qaeda affiliate. Both the Al-Qaeda-linked group and its larger rival, the Islamic State group, are not part of the ceasefire deal. Police say three men are dead and two other people are injured following a shooting at a bar in northeastern Indiana. A police spokesman says officers responded early today to a bar in Fort Wayne. Officers and paramedics found the victims as people were cleared out from the building. Two other people were taken to a hospital and they are listed in good condition. Witnesses told police they heard gunshots inside the bar and saw a person running away. When you pay with plastic in Britain now, you're not necessarily using a credit card. The new £5 bill that was introduced today is made from a strong polymer that can handle a trip through the washing machine without shredding like the paper cash that it is replacing. It's got the latest anti-counterfeit and security features, and Bank of England officials insist it will be cleaner, safer, and stronger than paper money. The portrait on the new five, it's Winston Churchill. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:35.
The presidential election is right around the corner. What's coming? Four debates.
There are a whole lot of presidential debates between
two major party candidates.
Donald Trump wants
Hillary Clinton.
And that's not even counting third parties.
And one big decision on November 8th.
About 100 million people could go to the polls. That's in addition to...
Be informed. Listen every day.
Discover what matters. Elect NPR News on air and online at nprnews.org.
Here's something that happens before Election Day, and that's the season of Talking Volumes. We launch on Thursday night with Elizabeth Alexander, a poet and memoirist. She's incredible. Krista Tippett's going to be there, too. She's going to join me on stage for the last part of the conversation. Tickets are available. A lot of these shows sold out. We've got a few tickets left. I'd love to see you at the Fitz as we launch Talking Volumes. You can buy your tickets at the Thread.
Programming supported by AIA Minnesota's 9th Annual Homes by Architects Tour, September 17th and 18th, showcasing 17 architect-designed homes and demonstrating how an architect can create excellence in design and livability. HomesbyArchitects.org.
Back to our conversation now on parent shaming, and to the phones to Jenna in Annandale. Hi, Jenna. Thanks so much for waiting.
Good morning, Carrie. Thanks for this show. I had the most embarrassing, mortifying moment. 2 years ago, I had a fourth grader and a seventh grader. We'd come from dance class, gave them happy meals, and they were in the car. And I'm like, why don't you just wait here? And they were all for it. They had a cell phone. So I ran into Super Target. 15 minutes, grabbed the stuff. I'm back out. I come out the door, and there is a police car next to my car, lights flashing. I run because I'm sure something has happened to them, second-guessing what I've done. And somebody had called the police because my well-fed, happy girls were sitting in there for 15 minutes because they didn't want to go in the store. He wouldn't tell me. I said, well, did you talk to the girls? He said, no, I was waiting for you. He wouldn't tell me who put the complaint in. So then my panic and fear turned to anger. And he said, well, we might have to report you to social services. I'm like, me? I work with kids all the time. I wanted then his name, his police number, and he wouldn't give them to me. And I was just mortified. And I want to raise strong girls that make good decisions. They knew not to get out of the car. They knew they could call me if they needed it. And I just felt mortified, made me second guess everything about that style of letting them make decisions.
Boy.
Can I address that?
Lenore, go ahead.
I get these calls from people usually at 2 in the morning. An email comes in. You won't believe it. I ran in to get, you know, the rotisserie chicken. I ran in to get the formula, whatever it is, diapers. And I came back out and there was either somebody videotaping me or a cop. Recently, there was a very similar story. You should know you're not alone. of a mom who went into a Starbucks. You could see it through the plate glass window. She's getting her coffee. Three kids are waiting in the car. She kept the sliding door of the minivan open so it wouldn't overheat. They're watching a video. And this woman was also investigated by the police, and she had before negligence. 3 minutes. She could wave to the kids. She saw the cop there. She came out. It doesn't matter. It's all in the cop's head that this somehow is dangerous, and that means that the mom is negligent. She had to take the kids to the doctor to get an exam to make sure they hadn't been abused.
Wow.
I mean, it's insane.
Wow.
So here's the answer. Here's what I think is the answer, because I've been, you know, dealing with this. How do we dial back the rage, and especially the fear that this mom that's calling just felt of, like, what if she is reported to Child Protective Services? What if they do open an investigation? What about her career? If she works with children, suddenly she's on it. They're actually, you don't know this, but every state has a child abuse registry, and you can get on it for letting your kids play outside or whatever. So we need to change the law. We need to have the what I call the Free Range Kids Bill of Rights, and it is one sentence long. And the sentence is this. It says, our children have the right to some unsupervised time, and we have the right to give it to them without getting arrested.
That's smart.
And It's just so basic because we all grew up with that unsupervised time, not to mention, like the lady was saying, that unsupervised time allows the kids to, you know, maybe not do so much in a car, but certainly when they're out playing, they're playing, they're coming up with rules, they're organizing their friends. I mean, all sorts of great things happen when kids are not supervised. And to start making only constant supervision the law of the land doesn't give kids any freedom, and it criminalizes parents who trust their kids like this mom did.
You know what I want to hear from Jenna? Are you still there?
I'm still here.
I'm curious about whether that experience makes you kind of stop, catch yourself a little bit the next time, you know, you want to leave your kids in the car for a few minutes, whether it just gives you that moment of, but what if, which
it
you didn't have before
of
it.
Of course, you come out in a panic.
Right.
And then you second guess, well, wait a minute. And I know they're old enough. I mean, my seventh grader at the time was a babysitter. She knew all the rules. But it made me think, well, other people are watching. Now, we live far enough out in the country that I let them ride their bikes all over. And that it doesn't bother me because I don't think someone's watching me right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it did. But when I'm in a group, I make sure people know that, yep, I'm here. They know I'm here. It was crazy, Carrie, really.
Well,
it's the surveillance society, too. I mean, what we were talking about before with, like, if everybody has a cell phone and everybody's cell phone has a camera, it's just so easy for everybody to be, you know, to be watching. That's the problem.
Shefali,
and then they assume you're wrong because why weren't you watching? It's easy. You could be, you know, you could have electronically, you could be watching your child every single second of every single day. And so any mom who decides
what
not to
end?
Do that.
I mean, yeah. Shefali, what do you think of Lenore's Bill of Rights there, the Free Range Kids Bill of Rights or Parents Bill of Rights?
Well, I think what she's speaking to is the return of a parent being able to trust where her child is developmentally and emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now for every 100 who can trust, there's one off chance of a parent who gets it wrong. And that's why we now have anxiety and this reactive stance towards parents, just in fear that this parent may be that one off chance parent who gets it wrong. So, yes, there are cases where things go wrong and parents do leave children in the car and forget about them. But to base our entire premise of, you know, our relationship with other parents based on these one-off chances is what we're talking about today. How do we keep our anxiety in check and not create this manic, reactivity, which is all in toward the balance of, you know, judgment, shame,
mm-hmm.
and putting someone down. You know, we've gone so far off the balance that we need to now come back to center, check our anxiety, trust our children, and trust parents. And yes, and there will still be unpredictable one-off chances where a kid falls down a cage. But that doesn't mean now we judge the parent for it or judge all parents for it. So how do we keep our anxiety? It's all anxiety-based. You know, all this reactivity
mm-hmm.
is control based on anxiety. You know, how can we keep it in check and keep ourselves toward compassionate, constructive action versus
mm-hmm.
reactive judgment.
I think Nick is speaking to this when he says, on Twitter, I'm 36 with two young kids. I'm stunned by the belief among my friends that the world is much more dangerous than when we were kids. And Steph off the page.
Jennifer says, I was once a parent who made judgments about others when it was just my well-behaved little daughter. Then my son came along and his wild, rambunctious nature quickly changed me into a target. Those parents I was once in alignment with who did no wrong were turning around and commenting on my parenting. And Julie says, I worry about leaving my 13-year-old son, who is adult size, in the car when I stop at the gas station because
somebody
people are crazy.
Right. Okay, so Steph, do you remember when we were talking about this show a month or so ago?
Mm-hmm.
One of our colleagues pointed to a blog from a parent that was headlined, "Dear Stranger Who Disciplined My Kiddo at the Playground Today." We all thought, oh, that's going to be a big rant about how dare you step in and discipline mm-hmm. my child. But here's what she says. I'm not saying you have the right to touch him in any way or yell at him uncontrollably. Only I'm allowed to do that. But please feel free to tell him to stop being a jerkwad if he's not waiting his turn to do the monkey bars, or if he's walking up the slide, or if he's throwing wood. See, I'd be watching this going, where is that mother? This is ridiculous. Or if he's saying bad words or being a bully or doing anything that he shouldn't be doing that's bothering someone else. Because even if you aren't his parent, you are the adult. She's saying, okay, if you feel like you have to step in on my kid's behavior every now and then, you can do that within reason.
You know, I will weigh in on some, if there's something going on, affirm, hey, knock it off. Like just a quick, nothing
that
too
would make me
over
knock
the top.
It off from
you know, just a nice knock it off,
right.
Gets a kid's attention and makes them realize, oh, there are other people around. It's more like a heads up, behave. I will do that. And if someone does that to my kid, that's no problem.
Lenore, do you have a problem with that?
I don't have a problem with that. I think that, you know, that is how communities enforce social norms, is they say, hey, that's not the way we do it here. But I do have a problem with us being with them all the time. I mean, some of the things, like, I know that when my kids cross the street, when they're with me, I'm always screaming at them to look up and pay more attention. And frankly, they're teenagers now, and it's insane. They're so old, they can't even talk about it. But okay. The point is that we're with them so much. I mean, at the playground, kids should be able to figure out how to play with each other. And if one kid is throwing wood chips, the other kids won't play with them. And then that they'll learn they can't throw wood chips because they really do want to play. And so once a kid is like age 7, 8, 9, we don't have to be with them all the time. And, you know, children have always played. And through play, they develop their interests and their focus and their social skills. And if it's just always saying like, no, Timothy, we don't walk up the slide. No, Jeremy, we're going to put that down. It's like, that's a drag. Let them play, and you'll have some free time. You'll be at the restaurant without them. You'll be paying for the gas, whatever it is. So it's just part of it is this idea that they have to be Velcroed to us all the time. And the only way to stop the law from saying, yes, they do have to be Velcroed, and we're going to arrest you if your kid is playing at the park, is to do that free-range kids' Bill of Rights, which says kids have the right to some unsupervised time.
Yeah. Shefali, here's a call for you from Deborah in Anoka. Hey, Deborah, thanks so much for waiting.
Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
It's a great program. I like the compassion threads that keep running through it.
Good.
I have twin boys. They're in the third grade. One's autistic and one's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just going to mention one thing, but I'm going to throw in another. The child who's not autistic is one that I love it when some other parent says, hey, put that stick down. He's a red-blooded American boy, and he needs to hear from other children and parents so he can kind of learn these things on his own. However, the autistic twin at times has been a little over the top, and several parents in my autism support group carry around little cards that they've just ordered for $10 from Vista print, and they say, my child is autistic, thank you for understanding. And when their child with special needs, anybody can do this, is going and doing something that's not socially acceptable, you don't want to be having to deal with the people around you. You want to deal with your child. If you could just take a card from your pocket and stick it in their nose.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, Shefali, the fact that a parent would have to do, I know that immediately
exactly.
levels the judgment, but wow, that we're in a
but
place where we have to do
that. This is what I'm speaking to. It's not so much what you say to the other parent, you know, knock it off or don't. Sometimes it's fine to say, sometimes it isn't. It's really about checking where it's coming from inside you. You know, why are you interfering in that? Why, you know, why are you feeling like you need to intervene? And even if your kid is being bullied by another kid, come to that parent first, checking your own reactivity and your own shaming behavior. Come to that parent and say, hey, your kid is really, you know, hurting my kid right now. Can we kind of just talk about it? I you know, trust me, I know that he doesn't need to. He's just being a kid. Come to that parent with connection as your forefront mission, not disconnection, not shaming. You know, it is sad that we have to walk around and saying, hey, be easy on my kid. He's autistic or he's having a hard time or he's on the spectrum. We only do that because of the judgment that comes from other parents. You know, we are our worst enemies. And isn't that tragic? And we need to step back, watch where we're coming from. Maybe that kid does need a knock it off being said to him. But first wait and see, do I know everything? Do I know who this kid is? Do I know what this kid is going through? You know, and can I come to this parent with a camaraderie, a sisterhood, a brotherhood, so that immediately they feel like, yeah, I'm going to check my kid right now. And thank you for telling me in such a loving way and in an understanding way. So now I don't go and beat my kid up, you know. So this is a trickle-down effect. How we are with each other comes from how we are with ourselves and then how we are with our children. So we need to just check ourselves all the time. Stop acting like we know it all. Stop acting like we have all the answers, and check our own rage, our own reactivity, our own anxiety. And then we live in a more compassionate world.
Deborah, how does that sound to you?
I love that. That's a great way of looking at it. I had thought to mention that we can widen, to stress that we can widen people's perspectives of why a child is behaving poorly, because it can be due to something that's nobody's fault. And the little cards, I like the idea of that. My child is doing so well now that I don't have to do that. But if one does that, we help the uninformed become informed, yeah. And maybe it becomes a world where nobody ever would even dream of handing out a card, because we can look at another child and say, I wonder if he has a special need, if that's why his temper is flaring up in the middle of a grocery store.
Right. There's an overarching idea here, and it has to do with understanding why a kid might be acting a certain way, or understanding why a mom might, you know, let her kid either wait in the car or walk to school. And it's the benefit of the doubt. You know, yeah. I think of free range kids is the benefit of the doubt movement. It's like, let's assume that everybody's trying their hardest. Let's assume that most strangers are good. Let's assume that there's, you know, that this is going to work itself out, as opposed to the opposite, which is grabbing the video camera or calling the cops.
Steph, I understand there was a little bit of host shaming on our page,
yes.
Of me.
Someone was asking if you have children, if you've ever had children.
I liked your answer to this.
Yeah, I told him that you had children, but then you got rid of them because you didn't like having children. That was just
that's because I admitted that there are places where I'm like, get control of your kid, will ya? Yes, and I will think twice after hearing Lenore and Shefali today. I absolutely will. Seriously, you were going
to
add.
I wanted to add that some people online said, oh, you must not have children of your own, that only people without children would ever
because
get worried
would say that.
About
yeah.
would overreact. But I found myself looking at children misbehaving and thinking, my children wouldn't behave that way. I think it's not just people without children. It's also when you're feeling superior because your kids are behaving slightly decently for once.
Lenore, you said this is parents to parents where the shaming is often happening, right?
I didn't specify it because I don't know. I just think that we're armed with cell phones. We've got the social media there, and we have this society-wide conviction that anytime a child is not supervised, they're automatically in danger. Therefore,
okay,
I can scream at the parents, particularly the mom, because I care more about their child than they do. That's how people feel.
Off the page, Steph.
Okay, Anne says, I cringe when I see parents traveling with their young ones who feel the need to hand out gift cards to their traveling neighbors as a way to apologize for their babies or toddlers crying. This act of bowing to the judgments of others just feels crazy.
Wow.
I've never heard of that.
You haven't? I've heard of this. When did we as a society become so intolerable and out of touch with normal childhood behavior? This puts an extreme amount of pressure and anxiety on parents to be perfect and feel like their children have to be perfect. It's sad. It's unrealistic.
Here's Isabel in Woodbury. Isabel, you're talking about the travel situation here with the kids. Is that right?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I find that the hardest place is always in airplanes because you're in a confined space. Your child is under stress already because it's a difficult situation, especially when they're young. And then your whole family dynamic is kind of put on display for everyone to give you snarky looks about and be completely judgmental about how you handle a situation, or according to them, you don't. Perhaps you're going through, you know, a child with a severe earache. There's nothing you can do to stop this child from crying, and possibly you can't even soothe them. And then you're getting all these nasty looks from people. It's just extremely stressful. It makes traveling worse.
You are so right about this, having been on planes, again, where all the passengers, including myself, are kind of murmuring, why won't that child stop screaming? Why doesn't that parent do something about it? In some ways, Shefali, it is kind of the natural reaction to disruption. What's the next thing you tell yourself, maybe in a situation like Isabel describes?
Well, I think, you know, it is a natural, but I also will challenge that it's a primitive reaction to life.
Understood.
Life, you know, inevitable unpredictability. And if we want to call a child a disruption, now certainly if the kid wanted to, you know, has gone poo-poo on in his diaper and the mom is not getting up, I have certainly given that mother a glare.
But
yeah, a little bit. You know, I'm like, come on, this is something you can control and help the kid. And the kid is uncomfortable. But coming from, you know, as much empathy as possible and learning to tolerate life's inevitable disruptions, you know, and especially when it comes in the form of our least powerful, you know, our animals, our children, you know, they are in the hands of their parents. They don't have control. So how can we at least lessen the parental anxiety so the parent doesn't unleash their own, you know, upsetness over the child? How can we, you know, just create support, and stop acting so superior? You know, I think that's the takeaway for me in every one of these situations. How would I like to be treated? How would I want to be supported in the situation? How can I offer light instead of darkness? How can I elevate the situation rather than, you know, toxify it further? Can I check in with myself and see where am I coming from? You know, what am I adding to the situation through construction rather than destruction? These are the questions I turn to in my own soul and use every moment to move toward light, you know, instead of darkness. There's enough darkness in the world. And, you know, shaming a parent is certainly not going to add any more, you know, any more light. It's just going to add more angst and toxicity.
Shefali, we have, a future colleague of yours on the line, to David in Lakeville. David, you're a postdoctorate psychologist?
I'll get my license in at the end of September.
Okay.
So then I'm postdoctorate. I think it's been a fantastic, fantastic show, and I really, really admire both of the guests and all the great things they've been saying. And one thing that I heard recently from a father of one of my clients, I'm a child and adolescent psychologist primarily, and I asked him if I could repeat this to other parents, and he said, absolutely. So it was great. He's a Marine. He's a retired Marine. He'd been in Afghanistan. And he told me that being a parent is more difficult than being a soldier. He said thing about being a soldier. Yeah, and I was like, this is stunning. He said, no. He said, it makes perfect sense. Everything that I did in Afghanistan, I practiced 1,000 times. Once we got to Afghanistan, we practiced for 1,000 times. Once we got to Afghanistan, not just in the United States.
Right.
I was practicing with people. Everyone I had been with for a long time. We all knew each other. We had a chain of command where someone makes a decision and you follow it. There are rules for everything. You know, earlier, about half an hour ago, someone was talking about they wish they had a manual. I'm a parent. I have twin 3-year-old daughters. I know exactly what they're talking about. It was just so incredible hearing this man who'd have these experiences. And he also said, and I think this is really relevant, he said, it's not like in the movies. When there's a fight going on, when people are shooting each other, they don't leave the soldiers there for hours or days to kind of take care of it. They rotate new soldiers in and take the old soldiers out so they get rest. And in addition, you know, when you're in Afghanistan, they send you to R&R in other locations. So you're not there the entire time. And just, I mean, it was just mind-blowing that a veteran had said something like this to me. And I think that's something that our society just doesn't appreciate. And I think it's really easy to not see how incredibly demanding being a parent is. And people have only so much energy that's available to give. And when we're kind of kicking people when they're down, it just makes it more difficult. I think it makes it harder.
David,
the discussion about, you know, more compassion, I think, is really important.
Yeah, David, we're at the end of the conversation, and I'm really glad that we were able to end with your comment. Thanks so much for the call. Lenore Shefali, I can't thank you enough. This has been so insightful. Thank you for being part of the show.
Thank you. Thanks, both of you.